It's hour number two on this Tuesday. It's Bickley and Murata coming to you live from the Auction Community Studios. Yeah, I know people don't like to admit it, but the NCAA tournament begins tonight. A couple of first four games in Dayton. ASU's got one of those games tomorrow night as they take on St. John's, one of three Pac-12 teams in the festivities. Here to talk NCAA basketball with us from Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports 1, Casey Jacobson, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Casey, how are you, man?
Ben and Vince, it's great to be on with you guys. I'm doing great, man. It's my birthday. I turned 38 years young.
So. Happy birthday, Casey.
Thank you, guys.
What I wouldn't do to be 38 again.
Oh, stop with that. Stop with that. All right, look at it. A handicap for us, ASU's chances. To me, Casey, for a team that was one of the last four in, this isn't the worst draw in the world for ASU to make some noise in this tournament, in my opinion.
No, not at all, guys. Remember last year, they got a terrible draw. They were an 11 seed playing game against Syracuse, whose zone just gobbled up Arizona State's guards. This year, it's kind of the opposite. St. John's, and I can talk all day about St. John's. I do most of my work for FS1, and we cover the Big East and the Pac-12. So I've seen St. John's play almost every game this season. They're a small team, very, very talented. Chris Mullen is in his fourth year, just like Bobby Hurley is in his fourth year, and they're both obviously fantastic players in their own right, but now coaching teams. And, you know, this is Chris Mullen, his first opportunity to coach in the NCAA tournament. None of these guys have NCAA tournament experience on his team. Mm-hmm. I mentioned they're small. So they play, they're very athletic, but they play kind of positionless basketball. Arizona State is going to have their hands full with Shamori Ponds. If you haven't seen him play at all, he's really good. A point guard who can score and assist. He's a left-handed. Their top three players are lefties. I don't know what that means, or I don't know how you want to consume that, but it is kind of interesting that their top three players are all left-handed shooters and scorers. To me, the key will be on the glass. So because St. John's is small, they rarely out-rebound their opponents. It was something that we constantly talked about when we were covering the Big East on Fox. If St. John's can compete on the glass, they usually win because they can control the tempo and they can get Shamori Ponds out in the open floor when they do that instead of taking the ball out of the net or giving up second-chance opportunities. When St. John's out-rebounded their opponents in the Big East Conference, which only happened seven times, in 19 games, including their tournament games, they were undefeated. When they didn't, they got smoked. So including their last game that they played against Marquette, they got beat by 30. They got out-rebounded by almost 20. So keep your eye on that. And then I just can't wait to watch a matchup between Lou Dort on defense and Shamori Ponds on offense. It's
yeah.
Be fun.
Another one of those telling stats on St. John's, Casey, and I stumbled across this because people talk about St. John's, and as Shamori Ponds goes, so do the Red Storm. But when he shoots under 50% in a game, St. John's is 9-10. If he's over 50 or better, they're 12-1. And you just kind of hit on it. But what I think is a key for ASU is they got a couple different looks that they can provide to Shamori Ponds defensively. You mentioned Lou Dort, who's been really good defensively. Remy Martin, if he's up to health, like Bobby Hurley says he is, can be a pest defensively, too. Do you expect ASU to switch up their looks defensively on Ponds?
Yeah, no question. I think the best defensive teams, and this isn't just ASU, this is just kind of a rule in general, even at the NBA level. The best defensive teams can employ different guys, give good players different looks. If you give even the a really good player at any level, even against a good defender, the same guy, eventually he will solve that Rubik's Cube, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're constantly switching guards, then bigs, guys who have longer wingspans, guys who are more physical, if you're constantly doing that, you can keep a scorer at bay for 40 minutes. And that's going to be the challenge. But yes, to answer your question, I don't expect Lou Dort to be the only guy that guards Shamori Ponds. I just expect him to be the one who's kind of most capable of stopping him, I think, on any given possession.
Now, generally, Duke is sort of like a four-letter word in college basketball, Casey. Zion Williamson's kind of made him very watchable, very entertaining, and I'm not sure people want to see Duke get upset in the first round maybe as they would in the past. What's your take on Zion Williamson, just the impact he's going to have on this tournament, and just who he is as a player?
Yeah, sure, Dan. I mean, look, I agree with you. I think Duke is often hated just because of their excellence. I know of no person, at least in the last 3 months that I've met or talked to, that doesn't enjoy watching Zion Williamson play basketball. There's not a whole lot to dislike about the kid. Not only does he provide highlight material every night he plays, but guys, you've watched him. He plays hard. Mm-hmm. And not only does he play hard, he's a good teammate. And when you watch their games, you can tell he genuinely gets excited when other guys score or other guys perform. And even when he got hurt, he was on the bench cheering for his guys. And I don't know if we should like make a big deal about that. You know, you should be a good person. You should be a good teammate. But too often I see guys who aren't that. And so not only is he fantastic, not only could he shut it down, like they say, and be the number one pick in the draft without playing, he's like, nah, I'm healthy. I'm at Duke. I came here for a year to try and win a national title. And I'm so excited as a for what we do, right, as analysts of basketball, just to get an opportunity to watch him perform at the highest level. And make no mistake, Zion Williamson is going to go on and have a good, even a great NBA career if he can stay healthy. But having been through this before, I bet you unless he plays in game sevens in the NBA finals, there aren't going to be as big of a stage as he's about to perform on if Duke does what we think he's going to do. He's not going to play on a stage that big in the NBA. It just doesn't exist. There's not that many eyeballs in the NBA finals as there are in a Final Four. It's just a special event.
Casey Jacobson, our guest. He's a college basketball analyst for Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports 1. He joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You know, we touched on ASU, one of three teams, and a lot of people were shocked that three teams got in from the Pac-12. Oregon's playing well. Even as a 12 seed, I kind of like their matchup, the way they're playing against Wisconsin in the first round. The other team, Casey, Washington, they were in first place all year. They've got 26 wins, but even 34 games into their season, I have questions about how good Washington is. Do you have similar questions?
Sure. I mean, we've talked about this for a couple of weeks now. So when they lost at Cal, I think that game was 2.5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, I thought it was going to be a wake-up call for Washington. Like, okay, hey, we can be beat. Maybe we took our foot off the gas pedal, so to speak. It hasn't been that. It hasn't been a wake-up call. It's almost been an exposure. Offensively, they are pedestrian, and they have kind of been that for the majority of the season. They have their moments where they score 80 points or 75 points. But most of the time, because they don't have a true point guard, they're asking Jalen Noel, the Pac-12 Player of the Year, kind of to be the point guard and a shooting guard and their go-to guy at the end of the game. And he's not really a creator. He's a scorer, a very good one. But David Christ isn't a scorer either, isn't a point guard either. So because of that, their offense is predictable. Sometimes it's very slow in the half court. So I think it's their biggest weakness. But, you know, their defense hasn't been that great either.
Yeah.
But I still believe in it. I still do believe in their length. I still do believe that Matisse Thybulle is like they play Utah State in the first round. And Utah State's playing really good basketball. And they have a really good scorer named Sam Merrill, over 21 points a game. Sam Merrill has never played against a guy like Matisse Thybulle in his life. I can't wait to see if he can still drop 20 or 25 points because, you know, Matisse Thybulle is licking his chops trying to get at Sam this week.
All right, what people really want to know is what you can give them to help them fill out their bracket. So I'm curious if there are any if there are any absolutes you believe in the tournament. Seth Greenberg said, he said a couple interesting things. In that second game, be wary of teams that have unique systems like Syracuse's zone, for instance, because you don't have time to prepare for a team like that on the fly. I've always noticed you never know what you're going to get in dome games because it's such a different perspective for shooters. What do you know from playing in, watching the tournament, what really goes down on that level?
This is always an interesting question. Doing what we do, doing what I do, I'm constantly walking around, like dropping my kids off at school, and the parents are like, hey, man, help me fill out my bracket. I'm like, dude, I know I do this for a living, but I have absolutely no idea. In one game scenarios, I don't know what's going to happen, right? And that's the beauty of this. That's why we love it. Here's what I do know. The favorite has to be Duke, okay? Like, I'm going to be genuinely shocked if Duke doesn't make a Final Four. They're probably the only team that I'll be shocked if they don't make a Final Four, unless something weird happens, unless they go through an injury or whatever. And I understand people are going to say, yeah, well, they've gone 2 for 21 from the three-point arc in some games. I understand that, but I still think they're the only team that I'm pretty confident that they're going to win the East region, despite the fact that they might have to go through Michigan State. They're a better team than Michigan State. The other one that I'm confident is at least going to get to the Elite Eight this year is Virginia. I like their redemption tour. I like, where they are as a basketball team. They're completely healthy right now. And I like the South, their South region. I'm not saying they're a lock to get to the Final Four because they have Tennessee as a two in their region. Mm-hmm. But to an Elite Eight, I'm really confident in Virginia. But to answer your question specifically, Dan, I don't have any formulas. What I do look for are teams. I don't care if a team is hot or not. I really don't care about that because, like, Villanova last year won a national title, and they lost in the Big East tournament. Okay, so to me, it doesn't matter if you're on a 5-6 game win streak. That is of no interest to me. Are you good enough or are you not? The big thing to keep an eye on are teams healthy? Do guys have a key player missing? I think that often plays a big role. Like a starter missing, right? Not necessarily a bench guy, but mm-hmm. if there's a starter missing, and then other like missed seeds. If you have been watching a team and you're like, why are they seeded so low? Those are teams that I don't know, for like a UC Irvine, for instance. UC Irvine should be a 12 seed. They are not. They're a 13, I believe. UC Irvine's a team that I have an emotional connection to. Their head coach is my good friend and my former coach at Stanford. But they're a team that I wouldn't be surprised at all if they win one or two games. They're well coached. They come from mid-major programs, so they're disrespected, but they know how to ball out. UC Irvine's been a program that has won year after year. It's not like a flash in the pan type of thing. Mm-hmm. So they're a team that I'm predicting will go and actually win two games.
All right, Casey, before we let you go, last thing, and we appreciate your time, especially on your birthday and all. Pac-12 did not have a great year. They did not have a good showing in the tournament last year. All three teams that made the field lost their first game. They got three teams in. Nobody's higher than a 9. If you had to pick one team from the Pac-12 you think that's going to win a game or be the last team standing of that group of three, who would it be?
This is going to be funny. I'm picking Arizona State. Yeah. I'm confident they're going to win against St. John's. And you know, that's one game. Oregon, you mentioned it. Vince, I don't think that matchup is great. I think Oregon's good enough to win against Wisconsin, but I don't think that matchup is great. Because what does Oregon need to do? They need to force turnovers, right? And get out on the open floor and create there. Wisconsin's a team that really takes care of the basketball. They love a slower tempo. There's going to be less opportunities for Oregon to do what they've done the last month of the season against Wisconsin, and Ethan Happ's a heck of a player. Now, is Kenny Wooten really good and athletic? Yeah, but Ethan Happ has gotten buckets against every player I've basically watched him against. So that'll be a matchup to keep an eye on. I'm not picking Oregon over Wisconsin in that mm-hmm. first game. So, and then Washington, I'm not sure about. I'm pretty sure that Arizona State's going to beat St. John, so I'm going to go with the Sun Devils on that pick.
You made a lot of people in the listening audience very happy with that, Casey.
Sure, no problem.
appreciate the time, as always, and enjoy the birthday, all right?
Guys, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Casey Jacobson. College basketball analyst for Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports 1. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti.
There's a rumor that maybe you could be maybe signing with the New York Giants. I'm just saying, I just heard a rumor about
I'm
this.
Not sure if it's... We are in New York, but I'm not sure if the Seahawks are going to let me get away.
Yeah, no.
I love Seattle, and Seattle's a special place. So, yeah, you know, been on to win a Super Bowl there, go to two Super Bowls, multiple playoff games and everything else. And
I know, but, you know, you're still young. You got, you know, you should go.
Are you bribing me to New York?
No, I'm just saying, dude, travel. Travel's good for travel's good for the brain, dude. I think it'd be fun to have you here. You know, if you sign...
I did win a Super Bowl here.
Yeah,
so New York, New Jersey's been good.
Yeah, all right. Well, anyway.
Travel is good for the brain. They've never rolled into a Hampton Inn and not had a room ready for them. I don't think travel was good for your brain that night.
It was a minor inconvenience. After that, it was perfect.
Okay. All right. That was Russell Wilson. This is a subject I brought up during the combine in Indianapolis.
And I
don't think you were feeling it then. Or maybe it was premature. But I had read a piece that said if Russell Wilson follows the Kirk Cousins path and keeps betting on himself with a series of one-year contracts and forces the Seahawks to continually to tag him to pay him, eventually those 15% mandatory raises make the player just unaffordable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pay a quarterback $50 million a year and field a football team. But that can be Russell Wilson's way to get someplace else if he wants to go someplace else. And you know what? Wouldn't that be good to be drafting the next Russell Wilson just as the real thing's leaving the division? That'd be kind of cool.
Oh, I see what you did there. I know you brought up, when we were talking about this in show prep, you brought up the Kirk Cousins comparison. And my retort to that was, well, unlike Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson's actually good quarterback.
Yeah, that's right.
He's said all the right things about staying in Seattle. But yeah, he can you get to that pay threshold as an NFL franchise to keep a veteran quarterback who's been very instrumental in everything you've done? Now, the Seahawks' success has largely been predicated on their defense, but they're not the same team without Russell Wilson over the last 6 or 7 years. They're just not. He's been that important to what they do.
Oh, I know. He's 75-36 lifetime. That's a good winning clip.
I mean, with the lack of weapons, generally speaking, he's had on offense during his tenure in Seattle, I would say he might be the quarterback you can pay that much money to and still be a successful team.
Well,
he might be that guy.
First of all, it obviously has implications on the Cardinals because the Giants are really circling wagons around Russell Wilson.
Maybe that's Gettleman's plan that he keeps referring to.
Could be.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they want no part of Josh Rosen if you can get Russell Wilson. So there's that. We've seen this constantly. It's not unusual for quarterbacks to keep setting the bar for one another. But Russell Wilson's contract's going to be legit because unlike Kirk Cousins, who got a boatload of money, he's not legit. And I was wrong about that guy, too. Keep me out of the quarterback room. That seems to be a recurring theme here.
You said not legit.
But I will say, what?
I just had probably a movie you never saw. Andy Samberg, Hot Rod.
No.
I am not legit. And therefore, I must quit.
How do you remember this stuff?
It's one of the most underrated funny movies ever made.
You're unbelievable.
And if I watch A Fish Called Wanda, you have to watch
Hot Rod. Listen.
And Fletch.
I'll do it. I will sign up for whatever you want. That is how bad I want. Because I've given up on you seeing Game of Thrones because I know you're not into the genre. But you should watch Fish Called Wanda.
I will. I will.
You like people who make you laugh.
I didn't mean to derail the conversation movie.
No, I just think that this is for real, man. And it gets even more for real if Russell Wilson is being told by his fiance or his bride or whoever Ciara is to him.
His wife.
His wife. I want to move to New York. Because Russell strikes me as that kind of guy. That what she says goes. I'm just saying it. Just my take on it. Yeah, I do think so.
Well, that was part of the rumor, too, is that
Jared strikes me as that kind of guy, too.
Really?
What she says goes.
Well, what Sarah says, I got to follow.
Right. Vinny and I, not so much. That's why we get in trouble.
Are you saying that the staying celibate before marriage was not Wilson's idea?
Yeah, I'm guessing probably not.
Yeah, it's gotta...
And if it was, that's probably the reason why those guys in that locker room were never quite down with Russell Wilson.
Suddenly uncomfortable.
Why is it uncomfortable?
I don't like thinking about that kind of stuff when it comes to sports.
Okay.
A former Seahawk, Earl Thomas, signed a new deal with the Baltimore Ravens. Kind of took the football world by surprise. In a conversation he had with Peter King for Football Morning in America on NBCSports.com, he finally explained everything that went behind his famous middle finger salute on his way off the field at State Farm Stadium against the Cardinals when he broke his leg. Quote, a lot of frustration that day. I was in a battle with the team, and I chose to play, and I was betting on myself. So when it happened, it just added to my frustration. I did what I did, and I saw Pete Carroll, and I was just like, you won, you won. Just a very disappointing day.
Okay, I find that honesty incredibly refreshing. He wouldn't be saying that if he was still in Seattle, but why was Pete Carroll fighting that battle against Earl Thomas? That's why you have general managers.
Well, I think
you don't want your coaches involved. That got Ken Wisenhunt in a lot of trouble here.
And Pete Carroll probably has a lot of power, but the way I took that, what he said, was that he saw Pete Carroll, and Pete Carroll was kind of the figurehead.
Okay.
I'm sure John Schneider wasn't on the sideline at that point.
Okay.
So maybe he was just the most convenient target for that finger.
I will tell you this. Pete Carroll's staff in Seattle, they have set the Guinness Book of World Records for most times being flipped off by players who play for you.
Yeah.
That's a recurring theme in Seattle.
I mean,
Seattle.
At least to their knowledge.
Marshawn Lynch did it. Yeah. Earl Thomas did it. And one of the receivers did it. I forget which one. There was a third who did it.
Wow.
Yeah. I think the last one was at Daryl Bevel. Yeah, no, it's anarchy.
Well, everybody in Seattle flipped off Daryl Bevel at one point.
But let's be honest, that edge of that foot, the reason why that team had to be broken up was the same reason that team won a Super Bowl, was the same reason that team just lit the minds and imaginations of people in Seattle on fire.
Yeah. The other thing in the NFL potentially disturbing is that Kansas City Chiefs receiver Tyreek Hill has got domestic violence in his background. Caused him to get kicked off the football team at Oklahoma State during his college days. He's under investigation in Kansas City for two incidents, including one that right now has been described where his three-year-old son suffered a broken arm. There's not a whole lot of details of it right now, but man, you want to talk about a potentially horrible story on every, the guy's got this, checkered past when it comes to domestic violence.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen, I hesitate to call Ray Rice a redemption story, although he got his life together after that and became a better person after what he went through. But to go down that road again in this climate in 2019 United States of America is so disappointing.
Yeah, look at that Kansas City team. On the surface last year, they were like one of the funnest teams possible to watch because of the way they lit up teams. And then Kareem Hunt kicking a girl in a hotel room lobby or a floor. And then Tyreek Hill, who his history just suggests he's one of the worst people on the planet. Suggests.
At this point, suggest is accurate. The International Sportsman's Expo comes to Westworld of Scottsdale this weekend. We're giving you the chance to win tickets. Plus, one grand prize winner will take home a gear pack valued at over $350. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win. Coming up, it's Tuesday. We got a round of Mock My World next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports poll question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
All right, today's Sanderson Ford poll question on the front page of arizonasports.com. Kind of like this one. Would you rather see ASU make the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament or the Suns draft Zion Williamson? I thought about it for a second. You got to go long term. It's got to be Williamson.
No doubt about it.
77% agree they'd rather see the Suns draft Zion. I'm actually shocked it's that low. 23%.
I like that question.
I guess that's the ASU fans that don't really care about the Suns or hate Duke or both. You can cast your vote. Today's Sanderson Ford poll question. It lives on the front page of arizonasports.com.
Bickley and Murata. Mock my world.
Are you mocking me? Are you mocking me? Stop it. You just didn't do it again.
Are you mocking me?
Real quick, want to get this out there before we get into Mock My World, and we'll dive into this a little deeper at 11:45. But first place I saw it was Aaron Wilson, who's pretty dialed in as an NFL writer for the Houston Chronicle.
And Adam Schefter is confirming
He's confirmed it. But the tweet that I have from Aaron Wilson in front of me, Heisman Trophy winner Kyler Murray meeting on the Oklahoma campus with Cardinals GM Steve Keim and coach Cliff Kingsbury, according to a league source. Schefter's confirmed it.
And Schefter added the last line, let the speculation continue.
They do have the number one overall pick.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're going to meet with some prospects. All right, it's Mock My World in honor of the massive payday that Mike Trout got today.
Yeah.
We're going to have a little fun.
We always have a little fun.
Our
at least
base,
I do.
Our basis for Mock My World is we will each draft a team. That's Dan Bickley, Eric Cohen, Jarrett Carlin, and myself. Of four famous figures with animals in their names.
Fictional, non-fictional, both?
I think real people.
Okay.
And we're going to have to, I think, go case by case on whether or not nicknames are used.
Don't like it, but okay, I'll go with you on that.
Okay. So, best animal-named people in society that are famous. We got a draft
order,
Jared.
Celebrities with animal surnames.
Yes. Yeah.
Or first names. Yes.
Okay.
So, yes, Dan, Eric, Vince, me. Dan, the defending champion.
Wow.
Now you beat me last week.
Okay. Put me down for Tiger Woods.
Oh, yeah. I never saw that pick coming.
I appreciate that, Vic. You left Mike Trout for me, so I'll take Mike Trout.
Wow. Mike Trout off the board. We're going athlete heavy first. Where am I going to go? I'm going to go with one of the great skateboarders of all time.
Oh, God.
Tony Hawk.
Nice. Had that written down, too.
Thank goodness. I did not think he would be here, but I will go with Larry Bird for my first pick.
Yeah, overrated.
And then one of my all-time favorite actors, Michael J. Fox.
Ah, that's the one I wanted next. Where am I going to go now? I'm going to go with one of the great comic minds of all time, who shares his first name with a type of bird, Robin Williams.
Oh, okay.
Great pick.
I hadn't thought of that.
Very good.
A lot better than my first pick.
I mean, Tony Hawk, one of the most influential media people, the business people, athletes. Yeah,
sure. Eric?
These are people named after animals. Snoop Dogg. Does he count?
His name is Calvin Broadus.
But almost universally known as Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. I think we have to allow it.
I'll allow it.
All right, Snoop Dogg it is. Looks like a young Snoop Dogg.
Thank you.
Dan, back-to-back picks for you.
Okay.
He looks like a young Snoop Dogg.
He really does.
Okay, give me Russell Crowe.
Oh, good one.
And Jake Lamb.
Wow, it's a little high.
I didn't even think of Jake
Whatever.
Lamb.
Whatever. I don't care. You don't have to critique my pick.
Yeah, we do.
Okay?
I don't care about
your team.
That's
you
how
don't
we
hear
diminish.
Me ripping into your
that's
team.
That's how we influence the voters.
You've won like two of the last 3 weeks.
Yes.
Wait, that's how we influence the voters?
You need to be stopped.
What terrible picks by all of you.
Yeah, thanks.
Right.
All right. Here's a terrible pick.
Oh, that's a little high for him, says the guy who has one career victory.
All right. You're up, Eric.
All right, only because he's my favorite all-time baseball player. And another fellow fishman, Tim Salmon.
Okay.
Wow, you're going angels heavy.
Yes. All right, Vinny?
Megan Fox.
Oh, pretty good.
Very nice.
One of the all-timers.
Nice pick or... Okay, never mind, Jared.
All right, I got two. My last two picks here. I'm going Cat Stevens. Although he changed his name.
That's not even his
Did
name
he?
Anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yusuf Islam
yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
Did he
somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I'm going to go B. Arthur.
That is the most all-time Jared pick.
Yeah.
I love that.
I have an eclectic team.
I love that pick.
All right. Your last pick, Vinny.
Where am I
going to
go?
What was Newt Gingrich taken, Jared? Sorry.
I'm going to go Sheryl Crow.
That's a good one.
I don't like my team.
Okay, good. All right, Eric, your last pick.
Well, Paul Bissonnette. That means
what?
Small bison, right?
It does it really?
I don't know.
Stop
That's
it.
Fine. Let him
I
have it. Let him,
no, there's, just your there's one S in bison. There's two in Bissonnette.
That's just ridiculous.
Okay.
You're kicked
this
out of the game.
Easy.
Get Burnsy. Where's Burnsy at?
You love B. Arthur, but not Bissonnette.
Come on. There's got to be a third Angels player named after a fish.
You know what? Tommy Bass. No.
Garrett the Fish Anderson.
Great,
Kevin
great
Bass.
Give me a Seal. Keep it easy.
Oh, there you go.
I'm sure that's his real name.
But that's...
I know.
Yeah. All right, last pick.
So does Flea count?
Flea, yeah. Absolutely.
Put it out.
I couldn't even tell you his real
Red
name.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That's a good one.
I don't know Flea's first name either.
Lance Bass, not taken.
Bear Grylls.
Bear Grylls, not taken.
Jamie Foxx.
Matt Hawk.
Would you have accepted?
The Dalai Lama, not taken.
Ooh. That's
so
funny.
I jumped ship in Hong Kong. So I say, look, hey, Lama, how about a little
for the effort.
Would you have accepted Benicio Del Toro?
Yes, I would have.
You would have?
Toro is
Spanish. Toro of bull.
But no, it's still bull.
This is all bull. That's
it is all Del Toro.
Yeah, this,
all
right. We should have went with our first category idea.
No, this is good.
This is a good one.
Not for me.
All right.
Yeah, you're right.
All right. Bick's got Tiger Woods, Russell Crowe, Jake Lamb, and Flea. Eric's got Mike Trout, Snoop Dogg, Tim Salmon, and Steele. I've got Tony Hawk, Robin Williams, Megan Fox, Sheryl Crow. You guys are all sexist except for Jarrett. We're the only ones that picked women. And Jarrett's got Larry Bird, Michael J. Fox, Cat Stevens, and B. Arthur.
B. Arthur.
Even though it's spelled B-E-A.
I know.
Well,
but, you know. We'll get the graphic up and you determine who wins our nonsense category of best celebrities with animal names here on Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I am C-3PO, Human Cycle Relations.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Welcome to the greatest show of all time.
It's going
to
be off the hizzy.
It will be lit.
Bickley and Murata.
He was in the pocket on 89% of his throws, and he got five throws batted down at the line of scrimmage. So you'd have to be really, really stretching to make the fact that he's 5'10 and an ace a gigantic factor in whether you're going to pick him or not. Should it be a factor? Yes, it should be. But I've had a long conversation with Lincoln Riley, and I think the one thing that he said is, he said, look, I'm telling you, I never one time in the year that he started for me, I never thought, well, we have to account for his height on this call I'm about to make. Or when we were doing the when we were doing our playbook and looking for plays before the season that we liked, we thought Kyler Murray could run. He said it was the same as if I had a 6'4 quarterback.
Peter King from NBC Sports Football Morning in America. He joined us yesterday here on Bickley and Murata, and there he is talking about and some interesting thoughts on Kyler Murray and the height thing. And I like what he said at the end there. Lincoln Riley never had to take into account Kyler Murray's height when calling a play. The batted down pass statistic was not alarming, certainly, when you consider that he was playing behind a very big offensive line at Oklahoma. Why are we talking about this today? Well, it is draft season and mock draft season, but also reports that have been verified by several sources now that the Cardinals brass, Steve Keim, Cliff Kingsbury, in Norman, Oklahoma, meeting with Kyler Murray on the campus of the University of Oklahoma today. So this will add more fuel to the speculation that the Cardinals, it will, because we're going to read into everything that happens between now and April. But this is going to add to the fuel of these conversations that the Cardinals are indeed in love with Kyler Murray.
I guess, I don't know what you can conclude with any of this stuff anymore.
I mean, yeah, but the Cardinals have the number one pick. They should be talking to a lot of different players.
Right.
And
yeah.
A lot of them will come visit them in Tempe.
Yeah. And again, I tell you, Vinny, this is really, and I repeated this only because we were in Indianapolis and we had a vantage point that other people didn't. And we had just gotten off the air that day. The personality element of Kyler Murray, I think, is something that is just kind of hanging out there. And we've heard people talk around it. We heard Charlie Casserly denigrate him, say the interviews he gave in the speed dating circuit, as bad as he's ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the Cardinals have any trepidation about Kyler Murray, the person, then I would say that this meeting is probably very, very important. You know what I mean?
I would think.
Because you got to make sure, all right, we really dig this guy. We dig the player. We dig the story. but we got to really dig this guy as well. So, yeah. And more to the point, we've heard that the Giants have worked him out. We've heard that other teams will take a look at him as well. It would just look weird if the Cardinals didn't interview him, didn't take advantage of their time with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So it's due diligence. So, yeah, I guess in that regard, yes.
And I look at it logically like you do. Due diligence, as owners of the number one pick, they should talk to as many prospects as they possibly can who would be considered for that pick, okay? But like I said earlier, it's already leading to speculation. Field Yates, really dialed in NFL insider, tweeted out a little bit ago, with the news the Cardinals are meeting with Kyler Murray today, a reminder, any team acquiring Josh Rosen in a trade would be on the hook for 3 years, $6.24 million, both in cash paid and total cap hits for a potential starter, valuable backup. Every team should at least make a call to Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So that's the next step in the speculation.
Yeah. This is why, for the people who look at Josh Rosen's trade value, again, I know we've made this point before, but I guess some of this stuff has to be repeated. He's a great value for teams. If he is a plug-and-play quarterback, he's already gotten a taste of experience. Mm-hmm. The thing that's really helping Josh Rosen, at least it should, is people have fresh reports on him. You know what I mean? Most teams just scouted this guy. So we have what happened on the field last year, which can be mitigated by Mike McCoy and Steve Wilks, but I think in a broader sense, the information teams are going to pivot on is what they did their own scouting coming out of last year's draft. You can get that guy and pay him that figure. That's a great value.
Yeah, especially if it turns out last year was indicative of everything else that was wrong with the Cardinals and not Josh Rosen. Daniel Jeremiah wrote about this on NFL.com as well. He wrote a piece, Quarterback Fits After First Wave of 2019 NFL Free Agency. The first two quarterbacks he mentioned in the piece have ties to the Cardinals. The first, Josh Rosen. He mentions this as a team fit, Bic, and this has been suggested before. The New England Patriots. Jeremiah wrote, again, based on Casserly's reporting, we're including Josh Rosen in this exercise. I could make a strong argument that the Redskins should do everything in their power to acquire Rosen because I believe he's better than any quarterback who will be available at pick number 15 in round one. However, the other team I would keep an eye on is New England. Not only would the Patriots land an heir apparent for Tom Brady, but they love a good deal, and Rosen offers a tremendous value for a young quarterback in terms of the money attached to his contract, which Field Yates pointed out. Plus, they have an ample amount of draft capital, 12 total picks tied for the most of any team. In my opinion, Rosen is worth the Patriots' first-round pick, 32nd overall. I would trade it for him in a heartbeat. They would still have plenty of draft capital to move around the board if they so desire, even if they swap that selection. Okay, from the Patriots' standpoint, that does make a lot of sense. But this is where we answer that question that was asked earlier in the show.
Yeah.
What do the Cardinals gain by shopping him now? What do they gain in this whole smoke screen process? They can likely do better than the 32nd overall pick for Josh Rosen. You agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I without a doubt believe that. And not only do I believe it because of who he was coming out of last year's draft, but just the affordability he's going to give a team. Don't sleep on the Pittsburgh Steelers as a team when it comes to Josh Rosen. We've heard about the Giants. We've heard the Dolphins. We've heard the Patriots.
And Washington.
Don't sleep on the Steelers.
Although, in theory, they just chose Ben Roethlisberger over their other two greatest offensive players.
But independent of that, Ben Roethlisberger seemingly every year now at the end of the year has to go through this evaluation process and, you know, am I coming back? Am I not coming back? And I know a lot of players do that. Maybe it's more public with Ben Roethlisberger because of his stature, but how much time does he have left?
For a California kid, Josh Rosen fits the Pittsburgh, their whole mentality. Pocket passer, tougher than he looks. Can survive, take a beating, good leader. Yeah, so I wouldn't sleep on that team. I don't know how many others there are along with that team. But, again, I think we're all just waiting for clues. What is it going to be? Who is going to be traded? Is this all a shell game with Kyler Murray? Is it 100% legit? Does Josh Rosen know right now he's being traded? I guarantee you Josh Rosen has good information. Don't you think?
I would hope.
You know, I would think somewhere along the line, his agent would be able to say, yeah, It's real. They're shopping you. And that's the thing. I don't think the Cardinals have to shop Josh Rosen. I think the market will come to them.
Yeah, they can probably answer calls as opposed to placing them.
Exactly. Exactly.
And especially when, you know, and I'm sure teams and front offices had the contract ramifications of Josh Rosen too, but to see it put out in front of you like Field Yates did and like Daniel Jeremiah did in his piece with those very affordable salary cap figures for a team and interested in Josh Rosen, that could add to the speculation as well.
But you kind of touched on this earlier. Is there any offer that could be made, though, where you make that trade before draft night?
I think so. And that might be the most important piece in all of this is the quality of the trade package for Josh Rosen could affect the timeline more than even, you know, if they're not blown away by a trade offer, I don't expect the Cardinals to come out and say before the draft, we're drafting Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
That won't happen.
No.
One's got to come before the other. March Madness tips off Thursday. With it comes your chance to be the Arizona Sports Bracket Boss, presented by Santan Ford and Schwartz Laser Eye Center. Just text BOSS, B-O-S-S, to 620-620 to sign up. Receive your bracket and compete for your shot at $1,500. Once again, that's BOSS to 620-620. We're at the halfway point on this Tuesday. The blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.